Tonight we have Tommy, and he really doesn't need an introduction around here. He's been past president of NAVA, and he always has a way of putting things that just brightens people up. I don't know how he does it, but it's infectious when he starts laughing. So, Tommy, if you come up here and do your thing.
Thank you, Jeff. Everybody, I'm Tommy. I'm an alcoholic. It's good to be here, huh?
Uh-huh.
Yes, good to be sober. Get organized here. All right, my story, I tell you every time, I tell my story, I still get nervous and everything else, but we'll let it fly, and I hope I can glorify God and the fellowship of AA. It's a miracle that I stand here before you right now, because when I hit bottom, I was a pretty wretched person, honestly, and the program and the steps, they work. Okay, I'd like to start out with the third step prayer. God, I offer myself to you to build with me and to do with me as you will. Relieve me of the bondage of self and put all that stuff, ego stuff, to the side, that I might better do your will. Take away my difficulties, that victory over them may bear witness to those who I would help with your power, your love, and your way of life. And may I do your will always! Exclamation point. All right. That's off of page 63. Yeah. Okay, I'm Tommy, alcoholic. Here we go. All right. What it was like, what happened, and what it's like now. I grew up in Albany, Georgia, and Memphis, Tennessee. And my dad was in the Air Force, and met my mom, who was stationed down in Albany, and so I grew up down there in the military crowd, that kind of thing. And my drinking started very innocently in high school. Before I get to high school, I want to say one thing, is that I was raised in a very, very good and noble community. And as a child, going to church, hearing the Gospels, hearing spirituals, this is my experience, right? And I really didn't, you hear it, and the emphasis was on trusting God. Even though you can't see a way, it's dire situations and everything else like this. And I heard all of this stuff as a child. And why I mention that is because I was in a meeting the other night back here, and I had an epiphany about this whole thing about the concept of the higher power. Even way back then, I was surrounded by people telling me to trust the process, even though you can't see it, and maintain your integrity. And it'll come full circle as I tell my story. So I was raised in a great community. I say it was great and that kind of stuff, around some very noble people and some very noble men. And I remember very vividly in church when the men would come down and get on their knees and pray. I remember James's granddaddy, Mr. Hawkins. He'd ride his bicycle to the church. He's an old man. He had to be 100 years old, and that kind of thing, So I had all these people, all my teachers in elementary school, and I can rattle them off, Miss Stanley and Miss Harris, All these people were good people. So I don't want my story is not that, I came in, predestined to be an alcoholic. I don't want to give you that impression and that kind of thing. Because it really was, in my mind, no excuse for me to become an alcoholic, So I was raised right. No excuses, right? No excuses. Okay. So, high school, I'm going to fast forward, I go through life pretty good, And high school was when I first experienced the drinking. It was during the early 70s. And that kind of thing. Oh, by the way, September 9th, 1990 is my sobriety date. That's when I hit bottom. But I only got one day by the grace of God. That's what I got. And so high school was a very cool time. That's when you're supposed to be cool in high school. Okay. Tough crowd, Judy. You know, you're growing up, you're an adolescent and that kind of thing. And, you know, it was cool to be a hippie or whatever it was. And drinking was just an innocent part of that, you know. And it was, I guess it was just being mischievous. You know, you get around and you go get a beer, stuff like that. And, you know, beer tastes and smells nasty. It really does. You know, when you first drink and that kind of thing. But somehow, you know, I worked my way through that. But when you first start out, you know, it's like, you know, you just do this and that kind of thing. And so you know, you drink, and you know, I can remember in high school, it was during the time of, and the music was a big thing on the scene at the time. You know, we had Allman Brothers Band, and we had Santana, we had War, we had Earth, Wind, and Fire. You know, it was just a great time. It was a time of innocence and that kind of thing. And then you would learn how to go to rock concerts and things like that, you know, and that kind of stuff. And we were good kids, all of us, and we never got in any trouble. And I'll give you a good example of my story was that I can remember I was with Olin Hall, you don't know him, one of my best friends, still is to this day. And that's a great thing about the community I grew up with. All these guys I grew up with, I'm still in contact with them. It's amazing. But we were driving, I think it was Baccalaureate or something, give an example. And I had my parents' car. It was a big Oldsmobile 98, you know, big car. I had a suit on and I think I had a tux on. And he had his family car. And we were racing, you know what I mean? Drunk as a skunk. What was I drinking? I can remember it. What is that stuff? Southern Comfort? Yeah, with Coke. Drunk as a skunk going down the highway. And the State Patrol pulls us over, right? Because we're barreling, we're just kids and stuff like this. And get out of the car, and the officer comes up, and it's David Gant's daddy, you see. So he knew who we were, knew our parents and everything else. So he just tells us to go on home. You see, that's the way it was back in the day. And of course, we didn't go on home. You know that. But that's the way it was back in the day. You know, growing up, well-connected, you know everybody. Part of my story in high school, too, and I'm just going to tell you, you know, because we were having so much fun with the drinking and smoking that funny weed stuff, you know, I mean, that was part of my story, too. All of us, my crew, we would get to school like at 7 o'clock in the morning, 6:30 in the morning, right? But we couldn't make it to homeroom on time. Okay, our first period, you know what I mean? Because we were out in the parking lot. Okay, so we'd be mischievous and stuff like that. Later through high school, drinking innocently and stuff like that. And went on to college. And, of course, going through college, there's drinking there. Go to football games, there's drinking. You got the sorority parties. Yes, you know, you got the frat parties, you know, going on. And drinking's a large part of that. And you got the, when you go to the parties, they got those big vats of stuff to drink. You don't know what's in it. You know what I mean? Okay, y'all don't know about that. And I think they pour like grain alcohol or something in it. You know what I mean? Juice party, that kind of stuff. And you dance the night away. And you have a great time, and you don't get in any trouble, and that kind of stuff. So, for me, the drinking, I think the big bird, the big cook uses the word conviviality. You know, it was great. It really was. You're around all your friends, you got your girlfriend, they got their girlfriends, you know the parents, you know what I mean, and nobody's doing no harm or anything else like that, you know. And we go on road trips to different colleges all around the South and the Southeast, all down to Florida. Because back in the day, if you put together like $100, you know, you can go to Miami and back. You know, back in the day. That's back in the day, you know. So and have a good time. You go down there and you crash out, you know, because one of your partners is in a frat or something. And you can crash out at the frat house. And that kind of thing, and have a good time, and all that kind of stuff. So, So again, drinking's interwoven with that. And I got my first job. I did graduate from college and that kind of thing. Yay. But I got my first job, and the drinking just is kind of interwoven, still continuing on, because it still was good times. Back then, money was flowing. There were a lot of jobs where I grew up, and all of us guys and gals had great jobs, and we could live really low on the means. And I'll give you a good example. I was living, a friend of the family had a rental property, and I was living up in the attic apartment, you know, a little one-bedroom thing up at the top, and I think I was paying like $30 a month, you know, with $15 for electric and gas bill. And so I had all that money to party. We call that Le Chateau. That's what we call that. I go back and look at that place and I say, I lived here. It's amazing. But back then, you know, during the college days, it was great. I let my friend Rudy come stay sometimes, you know, and people just come and go, and didn't have a kitchen or anything else. We cooked that on the hibachi. You know, the garage was my patio seat. When we pull around back, you know, and we had the boxes going, you know, the beer going. Y'all know all about that, right? Tailgating, right? It was great times, really. It really was. You got the steaks going, you know, and everything else. So it was all good times. Good times, and you got your girlfriends there and everything else. And the world is wonderful. You got money in your pocket, and the world is wonderful. It really is. And I was thinking the other day about telling my story. And I was thinking about somebody I went to a meeting. Someone talked about ritual, and I can remember the ritual that I was getting into. I just want to bring this up, just kind of tell you, like, you know, you get paid on Thursday, right? And then you had your car, you go get it all washed up, and you go get a haircut, you get your shoes shined, and you know, you get all geared up, living for the weekend. Okay, you don't know about living for the weekend. And it was great. And we'd go down to, we had favorite clubs we go to. We'd go to like the New Image Club, and Bill was down there as the bartender, and he knew you when you came in, and the gang was there, and it was just wonderful, you know, and, you know, the music was great, it was thumping, we had, like, Commodore, She's a Brick House, and all of that, you know, that was back in the day, you know, disco, okay, y'all never did disco, huh? You know, it was great. You know, you had the stack shoes, you know. You don't know about the stack shoes, do you? Yeah, you can order from Flag Brothers. And you can hardly walk in them. You know, they come back around now. You know, I see the ladies with them on now. But, you know, men used to wear them too. Yeah, that's right. Uh-huh. Anyway, just kidding. So it was just all good. It was just a lot of dance. And there was that whole ritual thing, getting ready, calling everybody. Where are you going to be? Where are you going to go? And we go, we dance the night away, that kind of stuff. And then on Sunday morning, you know, we go to church, that kind of thing, and try to keep it in focus, you know, that kind of thing. So it was all good, though. That's what I'm saying. It was all good, and that kind of thing. In college, I really didn't get any trouble with my drinking in college. But on my job, I got a great job at a factory down there. I was making more money than I could stand. I had a lot of money, you know, discretionary money I could just burn and that kind of thing. So we were living large. And when I went to treatment, and finally got treatment, one of the things they said, my character defect was grandiosity. Wonder how I got that, you know. But anyway, so my first inkling that I had a problem with drinking was my boss called me into the office. He's a friend of mine. We partied together and that kind of thing. And he called me in the office and he says, Tommy, you've missed about every Friday for the last year. You know? And but my productivity when I was there was far above and beyond everybody else's, you see. And he had a special talent. That's the way it is with a lot of alcoholics. We have these special talents that we could use, you know, to generate it. We build it up and we tear it down. But that's later on down the road. So I went into treatment down in Auburn and went into Crossroads recovery program. wonderful program, and I went up, the hospital was Phoebe Putney Hospital down there, and I went up on the, I think it was the third floor. It was the ward that they lock. Okay. So that's kind of new to me. But the cool thing was that the doctor over everything, what did I say? Like, don't I know you? And it was David's dad. So once again, you see, well-connected, you know what I mean? And my exposure to AA was not that you got to, you know, work the steps, you know what I mean? None of this other stuff. Dr. Alan T. did not do any of that. He just gave me a lot of love. He viewed me just like his son and everything else. And because, you know, it's probably with everything else. In a sense, I was. And never did browbeat me or anything else, you know? I actually had a good time. In treatment. Okay. You know, that just goes to show you that I didn't have a clue about what was going on. You know, I'm here, it's a 28-day program, you know, and I'll do what's asked, I have a good time. I'm real compliant. You know, I know how to play the game, you know what I mean? So I'm real compliant, and plus I'm not a bad guy, so, and that kind of thing. And so I came through that, and I came out, and they had told me, they suggested I go back to work. But I'm a man, I had so much pride at the time. I was so embarrassed about being away from my job for 28 days. Because, you know, anybody seen Tommy? Well, he's been gone for 28 days. We know what that means. You know, so I had so much pride, I could not go back to my job. They told me to go back to the job, you know what I mean? But about the ego deflation and the humility, I didn't have that. Bump that, I'm rolling. And so I moved back to Memphis with my grandparents were up in age, so I wanted to go there and help them in their latter days so they didn't have to go to a treatment facility and things. I mean, not a treatment facility, yeah. Old folks home. That's it. I know. So I was there with them, you know what I mean? That was my motive, okay, quote unquote. And because my folks were connected, I landed a job, a good job there, and I was back on my feet again, rolling. Great corporation, good position, and things like that. So the drinking, I was just, you know, just rolling right along through life, not even having a clue and anything else. And later on, about 2 or 3 years later, I got in a relationship, and I was blessed with the birth of my daughter, my first daughter, and that kind of thing. And this was, I guess this was like a litmus test for me, and that kind of thing, because I really love my daughter, and I wanted to stay there for her, and so I was taught to do the right thing. You made that bed, so now you go sleep in it, you know? That's a noble thing to do. And so that's what I tried to do. I left my place and I moved in with her. That was mistake number one. Okay, I'm just kidding. You know, it's all my fault. You know what I mean? That kind of thing. So I moved in. I tried to do the right thing. And I tell you, you know, you can have a great relationship as long as you are separated from somebody else and you got your own place and your own space. And you know what I mean? There's not a lot of stressors on it. But man, you move in with somebody. You talking about stressors. Okay, y'all don't know about the stressors either. But they come out and that kind of thing. So here I am, you know, and I had told, what's your name? That I didn't plan on staying in Memphis. You know what I mean? Memphis was not my kind of town. You know what I mean? It's, to me, it was like, it's a big country town. You know what I mean? That kind of thing. They still wearing Jerry curls and, you know what I mean, Cadillacs with gold rims on them. You know what I mean? Anyway, it's like backward country. You know what I mean? So I said, I'm not staying here. You know what I mean? But, so, you know, I'd love to go to a more cosmopolitan area. That's who I am and that kind of stuff. But she had other ideas. And that kind of stuff. So we were in conflict, so I said, I'm staying. I'll stay here. You know what I mean? So I stayed and I moved in and again, didn't understand the concept of resentments. Ooh, yeah, resentments. Didn't understand that at all, and you know, the spiritual implication. But before I get to this point, I want to bring something else too about how this cumulative effect of drinking occurred on me. You know, I was getting glimpses along the way and people were telling me, you know what I mean, for instance, like if you go out and you drink too much, and then you drink too much, you can't go to work the next day. That's a little glimpse that you might have a problem drinking too much with the alcohol, right? You might. You know, it says in the book somewhere about early on in our careers, if we had a car, we could have stopped it back then, if I really didn't want to, you know, and that kind of thing. So I was getting a little glimpses of that, or I might go out and party a little bit too much, and what's the name, be fussing at me, waiting at me at the door when I come in, you know what I mean, that kind of thing, and stuff like that. And this cumulative effect, I want to share this about, you know, most people when they, I guess normal folks, when, you know, there's somebody says, you look at your bank account, and you see where you're spending too much money partying, see, a normal person would just cut back on the partying, right? But me being an alcoholic, you know what I mean, I just go somewhere else where I didn't have to hear it. Okay, never mind. Anyway, you know, I kept rolling with the partying and the drinking and stuff like that. And I didn't get it. And my whole thing was that as long as I'm paying the bills, you know, I'm wearing the pants and I'm doing what I'm supposed to do, everything's supposed to be okay. Right? And you can, you know, that kind of stuff. So this whole thing about resentment, I was very resentful and didn't know it at the time. And I was really, really resentful. I was pissed, you know, about the whole situation. It wasn't working out. I was trying to do my best, had a budget and all that kind of stuff for the family, put us on the fast track, you know what I mean, we saved money and, you know, do the normal things that I think any normal man would want to do. That's what I thought anyway. You know, so I had a vision, right? But it wasn't her vision. So it was, you know, the whole money thing, it was a big, big blow about the money thing, and spending my money faster than I could make it. And I was just resentful. I was just very resentful. So I did what alcoholics do. You know, at the time, I wouldn't say I was an alcoholic at the time, but I did drink again. You know? And this was about, I drank again, and it was terrible. The effects of it were immediate and stuff like that. I just went off the deep end with the drinking. I was so angry, you know, and that kind of stuff. So I checked myself. I went on, you know, a good bender or something like that. Before I used to be, I was like more or less a binge drinker per se. In other words, I'd work hard and earn a vacation or something like that. And then I'd take a nice vacation somewhere, you know, go to Santa Monica or somewhere and just get away from it all and kind of blow it out. And then come back and work hard some more. That's kind of the way that I operated. You know what I mean? I always try to keep it between the lines, that kind of stuff. But this last time, I really blew it out. I put my job in jeopardy. Had got a great job and this kind of stuff. And I'm just kind of cutting through a lot of this. This is kind of the time here. Okay. And so I went into treatment a second time at Parkwood Hospital. And I went in, and I tell this part of my story. I went in with my briefcase, and I had my shirt and tie on, and a fresh haircut, because I still had to call the office while I was in the psych ward. Didn't have a clue. You know what I mean? Did not have a clue about what alcoholism was or anything else about it. It was just part of the thing, you know what I mean? I played a game to go through it and that kind of stuff. And so you can see how ridiculous I look come up in there, you know what I mean, that kind of stuff. So I went in, and I still didn't get it. I was compliant, and I did everything they told me to do, you know, and that kind of stuff. And, you know, stood in line, got the pills, you know, every morning, right? You have to get to stand in line when I get the pills, you know, at the nurse's station. Okay, get the white cups, the little white cups. Okay, all right, some of us know about that. Anyway. And all of that, okay. And so I came back out, and I was, things still weren't working out in this relationship. And I really, the beauty of AA is that I have put people and men I can go talk to about stuff. I really didn't have nobody to talk to or how to figure this thing out, you know, what I was in. On one instance, you know, I love my daughter and everything else. I do everything for her. But on the other end, the relationship wasn't working. And I really didn't want to get a divorce. So I felt like I was stuck, you know. And so I was stuck to the bitter end. And so the resentment, all of that stuff, I never processed any of that stuff. So eventually, you know, I drank again. I was just so mad and everything else. And so I just, you know, I said, F it. You know what I mean? If you're gonna burn money, I know how to burn money. And I'm going to show you how to burn money. So that's the whole thing about destroying myself, you know, getting at somebody else. So I just started drinking and everything else and missing work, doing the typical things that alcoholics do, going to the doctor and trying to get excuses and all this other stuff and that kind of thing. And it turned really, really bad. And I couldn't turn it off, the drinking this time. It was no joke. And, you know, all this stuff happened over a period of, I'd say, maybe 10 years or 15 years. So it wasn't an immediate effect. But where alcohol landed me was, I was there, as my friend Larry liked to say, it landed me in some bandominiums. Those are condominiums that have been abandoned. Okay. On the corner of Shelby Drive and Mill Branch. That's where I wound up. With all the loneliness, with all the heartache, with all the, you know, what's the use, I'll just commit suicide. That's going from drinking and partying and having a good time to total desolation, desperation, isolation, 100% failure. Somebody like me, you know. And it was bad. So I had to make a decision then to die. I mean, to live or to die. And I don't know where I got the spark from, you know, to decide I want to live. I don't know where it came from, but I'm so glad that it did. I'm so glad that it did. And my approach, you know, we talk about how we establish our relationship with God. So my approach, when I came to the God of my understanding, I was at my most wretched. Okay, so it wasn't all about the perfectionism and the good grades and the credentials and the pedigree and all that other stuff. I was at my most wretched. And that's where I like to stay, in terms of ground zero. And I'm so glad I got a God of my understanding that took me in, you know, pitted my every moan, as he used to say in the old church. So I can hear all that stuff now. Just coming right, it's coming in loud and clear. I can hear what they were singing, those old gospels way back when. You know what I mean? Pitted me and heard my every moan. And so so I surrendered this time. And what did I do? Briefly, it was very rough for me those first years of my recovery. I was destitute. Didn't have any money. I could not get a job. And it was about ego deflation. I can look back on it now. It was about ego deflation. And also, too, it was about, you know, stepping aside and, for once, instead of being so self-reliant, let God take care of me. Let's see what this God thing is really all about. Let's see if it's real. Let's just see if it's real. You know, let's trust the process, no matter what. And so I didn't stop trying to get a job or anything else like that, but I just couldn't get one. There was a block on it and that kind of thing. So for my first years, I was going to the Central Group in Memphis, and that's a very eclectic AA group. I walked around the corner. I was walking, going to the group and that kind of stuff. You know, so some of you know my story. I broke the corner, and I'm walking, and I'm going to my AA group. And then there's all of these Harley Davidson motorcycles out front with Dixie flags flying off the seats. And I go, higher power. Oh, hell no. But, you know what I mean? I said I'd go to any length to stay sober. So I went around and found all the love I need. And the only reason I'm here today is because of the love I found in the Central Group. And those guys are just, they're off the chain. They're cool. It's down in Overton Square. Musicians, all kinds of famous people. Just a great group of people. And I did what I was suggested. Coffee cups, clean up. I stayed in the meeting rooms all the time. They had table tennis, ping pong tables, and that kind of stuff. So that's how I got good at playing table tennis. You know, you players out there, just see me after the meeting. So I did that, and this was years and that kind of stuff, and I was doing good on time. Okay, stay here a few more minutes. So I stayed there, and it was tough. It was riding the bus. I got jobs in warehouses, where I had to unload the big carrier trucks, you know, and one of them was at Sam's Warehouse. I got a job there, and you're supposed to unload the truck in like 10 minutes. Now, they don't care if it's volleyballs or refrigerators, you know. Here I am, a middle-aged man, working with these young guys, they're bodybuilders. You know, them stones coming off, I'm like, it's killing me. Killing me. And I tell my sponsor, man, fuck this, I can't do this, and all this other stuff. But it was just what I needed, though. You know, I can see it in hindsight, because I was working so hard, you know what I mean, and that kind of stuff, and I was so tired at the end of the day, I make my meetings, so I just go home and go to sleep. You know, and that kind of thing. It was just what I needed. But I was bitching all the way. You know what I mean? Yes, I was. You know what I mean? And my sponsor just, you know, always used to take me and sit me down and say, do you have a meal a day? Did you take a bath? You know what I mean? Were you safe and secure last night where you slept? You know what I mean? And I had to answer affirmatively, yes, yes, yes. Did you take a drink? No. Well, guess what? You're okay. Woo! You know what I mean? Ego deflation. For somebody like me, you know what I mean? Somebody like me. So, because you know I'm supposed to be high flying. Anyway, so I stayed there for Memphis for a while. And I got a lot of support from my dad, from my Uncle Abe, my great Uncle Abe, and my great Aunt Estella. At the time, I didn't have much money, but they'd give me $5 or something like that. My Aunt Estella would, she's like 90 or 100 years old. My Aunt Estella was very cool. And I'd tell you a story about her. She'd hear people, she'd go to church and hear people, you know, talk about their ailments, and then she'd go to her doctor. You know what I mean? And come back one day, she says, yeah, baby, I got the pacemaker. There ain't nothing wrong with her, you know what I mean? And then I go out back, and she's out back smoking a cigarette. You know? It's like, don't tell my doctor. She's very cool. I love her, I love her, I love her. And Uncle Abe, a great man, you know, great man, great man. And I came on back, my sponsor at the time, was living in Huntsville, Alabama. And I came and stayed with him, and I slept on his couch with Tim and his wife Cookie, and again I was still destitute. I was broke, no money. You know what I mean? Somebody like me. You know what I mean? It was like, man, it was like, woo. I'm used to having money. You know what I mean? I'm used to working my way through it. I'm a self-reliant person, right? Okay, the men who are self-reliant, are you out there in the audience? Okay, very good. Thank you. So I'm used to that. So, but again, I had to. God was just teaching me. God was just teaching me. I can see He's working with me then and there. So I was staying with Tim and Cookie in Huntsville, Alabama, and I had an old 1978 Buick Regal, and I had all my belongings. I had an open carriage in the back where I put all my belongings on it. The meager stuff I had, you know, from my college days and stuff I had accumulated. And I got some garbage bags and, you know, split them open so I could make a tarp, right? Then I got some twine and threads to tie it across to hold it down. And I'm coming down the highway looking like the Beverly Hillbillies. And so I pull up in Tim's neighborhood, very nice neighborhood. You know what I mean? And the neighbors just going by, just looking. They just looking, what in the world is going on? You know, my car's out front. You know what I mean? I've blown a gasket, oil's leaking, steam's coming everywhere, this kind of stuff. You know, very nice neighborhood. And so, you know, I told Tim everything. I said, you know, I'm so sorry and everything. He said, don't worry about that. You know what I mean? Whatever it takes. That's the beauty of AA. You know, that's the beauty of AA. Whatever it takes and that kind of stuff. So part of my story is this, is that it was cold, very cold in Huntsville and that kind of stuff. And I was out there working on my car, and I'm not a mechanic by no stretch of the imagination. But you give me a book, a wrench, and some pliers, and I'm dangerous. So, so I'm out here, and I'm going to change the gaskets and all this stuff on my car. It's just, you know, like blown because I'm carrying all this weight, and I hadn't prepared for it. And that kind of stuff. I'm out here working in the cold every day, you know, Tim and Cookie going to work and everything else. And you know, I'm trying to get myself together. I'm, you know, I don't want to feel useless or like I'm, you know, freeloading on somebody else or something else like this. And, you know, basically don't worry about it and that kind of stuff. But I still felt that way. And one day the postman came up to me. His name is Alex. You know, I don't know this guy. He goes, how you doing today? And I said, well, I'm fine. You know, I'm out here in the car working. It's freezing cold, like November, December, like 20 degrees, you know what I mean? Rain, all this other stuff. And he goes, I see you're in pretty bad shape. I see you got out-of-state tags and everything else, you know what I mean? All your stuff's out here getting wet and all this other stuff. And I say, yeah, I'm trying to do the best I can, and that kind of stuff. And he goes, well, are you a Christian? I go, well, not really, you know what I mean? I'm just, you know, kind of, you know what I mean? Why do you ask? And he says, I come by here every day, and every day you're out here working. You know what I mean? And you're quote unquote doing the next right thing, you know, I didn't know at the time, and that kind of stuff. And he says, it's just amazing because I can see that you're a bad off, and still you've got a good attitude. You know what I mean? I said, well, I really don't have a choice in the matter. Really don't have a choice in the matter. And that kind of thing. And to make a long story short, what he said was that, he says that, I tell you what, me and my wife been praying about your situation. And this guy don't even know me. And he says, here's what we're going to do. We'll give you $600, you know, and we've also arranged for you to get a U-Haul and a van so you can put your car up on the top and you can make it on to where you're going. Can you believe that? No. That's real. That is real. You know? And I got a little more money from my brother, Gerald, and that's how I made it to Atlanta, coming back home. That's how I made it, by the grace of somebody that I don't even know, you know what I mean? That kind of thing. I paid him back and everything else, and that kind of stuff. But God's grace is real, you know what I mean? If you trust the process, if you let go, absolutely, you know what I mean? Great things happen. This has been my experience. This is my experience now. So I came to Atlanta, got a little bit of money, and I landed up here on Scalloper Road. Right there, the apartment's right up there, and I went and talked to the landlord at the time, and I told her my situation, you know what I mean, and, you know, she said, well, I tell you what we can do for you. We're going to let you move. We got somebody just moved out, got 15 days at the end of the month left, and you can move in there for free. And if you think you can land on your feet and start paying the rent in 15 days, I'll let you move in. So I moved into that apartment, one-bedroom apartment, you know, with no money down, everything else like that. God's just making a way. It's just incredible, you know, that kind of stuff. When I let go, when I look back on it. And so that's how I wound up here in Napa. And so it's right down the street. I used to ride my bicycle a lot. Old guy by the name of Marshall used to come and get me from downstairs. A lot of people used to hang out downstairs. And he'd come and pick me up and cuss me out all the way back to the club. You know what I mean? When are you going to get a job? When are you going to get a car? And everything. So he always came and got me. You know what I mean? That's the whole thing. And he's a half-decent chess player. Just kidding. Okay. He's pretty good. I still beat him, though. But he's gone on, you know, to the BAA meeting in the sky and that kind of stuff. And where I am now, as I speak today, I'm unemployed. My job ended Friday. Yeah, it did. You know, and so, but the reason why I want to share this is God bearing witness, right? Because it says, now come the acid test. Can we live the good purpose under all conditions? And I want to, you know, try to demonstrate to the newcomer that's coming in and stuff. You know, life goes on good, bad, and different sideways, right? And we just keep on doing what we do. Right? Helping another alcoholic to change sobriety, you know what I mean? Doing service work, you know, coffee cups, straightening up chairs, you know what I mean? Listening to footsteps, all of this stuff, because I'm a living witness that God will sustain us. And also, I just want to tell you part of the story too, is that just got off the phone, I was in the car with a friend of mine, a guy called me, got a contract, it's in the works, see what I'm saying? He said the paperwork's in the mail, you know? Are y'all gonna hear me? This is the way this thing works. It really does. And I love the new pair of glasses when, who wrote the pair of glasses? Chuck? Chuck Steele, yeah. And he talks about, you know what I mean, our business, you know, where before that was what all I lived for and everything else, and that kind of thing. But now, you know what I mean, God is the sustainer and God is the source, and this is just for me. And the only requirement for membership is a desire to stop drinking. So, you know, this is just God. I'm understanding all about here, you know, with the God talk. But this is my story. So, you know what I mean, even though I go through bad times and stuff like this, I am okay. So if I came, just on my sponsor to say, way back when, you know what I mean, if you had a meal, you take a bath, you know what I mean? You had a drink. You know what I mean? You got a place to sleep. you're okay. It's quite amazing. When I stay in the moment, right here, right now, you know what I mean? The grace of God is ever sustaining, ever illuminating. And I love what the big book suggests, and it says that sobriety is the first gift of the first awakening. And there's many more. And I think as we trudge the road of happy destiny, and this is just my experience, as I let go more, and I try to be of service, and to help the other alcoholic achieve sobriety, you know, new adventures abound. Now, the thing about it, about the new adventure thing, is that you don't know how it's going to come, and you don't know what kind of shape it's going to come in. You know? And that's just been my experience. Like, I lost a job before, and I didn't know what I was going to do and that kind of stuff. So it winds up I get a job down at Daytona Beach. Oh, darn. You know, I get to work and then go out and walk along the beach every day. Darn. You know, it's just my experience. So, let's see, did I cover everything? Did I cover what happened? You know, how the drinking slipped up on me? You know what I mean? The destitute that still hung in there, though. This is a phrase I used to say, don't quit before the miracle. And oftentimes it seems like, you know what I mean, you're never going to get a break. And you're always going to get setbacks and frustrations. You know what I mean? But don't quit before the miracle. Don't quit before the miracle. Because when I came here, I still was getting these jobs where I was making like $3.25 an hour and this kind of stuff. And I looked at it because this is the ego deflation, the humility journey. You know what I mean? That kind of thing. One of the jobs I had when I came to Atlanta, I used to work in a kiosk at the parking. You know, when people come in the morning, good morning. Good evening. Good afternoon. Okay, never mind. See what I'm saying? Oh, I hated it when it was ego deflation. And don't ask me how I paid my bills. And that kind of stuff. But the whole thing is magic in AA. There is freedom from the drink. You don't ever have to drink again. I think the beautiful thing about the AA thing, too, is that the willingness to stay completely open about what's going on with me. That's how I maintain my sanity. You know what I mean? No secrets. You know what I mean? I'm not a saint by any stretch of the imagination. And I'll stretch it a little bit more. Okay. But I do maintain openness. I let my close friends know exactly what's going on with me. I speak their guidance. And I try to do their will and God's will. Progress, not perfection. And somehow or another, you know, it's working. It is. And all that other stuff that I was raised with and trying to be an achiever and all that other stuff, that stuff's secondary now. It really is. Do God's will is really where the essence and the beauty lies, you know, and that kind of thing. So, Tim, how are we doing? Okay. Tim, I got another 15 minutes. Anyway, thank you, everybody.
Oh, man. Thank you, Tommy. Great job. I knew it would be. Let's see, who did I ask you? Oh, Mark Holmes. Please hand out the chips. I'm right here ready for you.
My name is Mark, and I'm an alcoholic. Here at AA, specifically at NAB, we have a chip system. Great story, Tommy. Then my experience, as long as I stay sober, my job ended Friday too. But I'm far from being broken. I got sobriety and things are going to happen. Thanks, sir. We have a chip system here. It represents the time we have sober. First chip we got white, for those who want to try this way of living just for today. We have silver chips for 30 days. We have a red chip for 90 days. We have yellow chips for 6 months. All right. We got a green chip for 9 months. Blue chip for your multiples. We have a white chip. Those want to reconsider. Give yourself a hand for the chips you hold.
Thank you very much. Well, Mark, what's our first announcement?
My name is Mark, I'm not a lot of people. I hope you can put the lips down and say, more likely to get any lips to see
that. All right. Do we have any other announcements?
My name is Henry, I'm an alcoholic.
Henry!
We
heard that we have more than enough
couches over here. All right. That's good news. The alcoholic
that
is actually not true. Uh-oh. It's postponed until next time. I also have people who
don't have it. And well, then we all ought to come down to the commission and vote
it down. All right, then I have.
Let's go.
Thank you.
Okay, thank you, Leslie. One more reprieve. Yes, sir. Yes, James.
I'm James, and I am not a holler.
Hey,
James. I wanted to announce that finally, the memorial for Lee Cornwell is going to happen. So I got a notice posted out here and downstairs, but it's going to be on the Friday, the fifth, in Stockbridge, Georgia. That one will be a brief service. Also, though, there's going to be a memorial service at the Knights of Columbus Hall on Buford Highway. That will be on March 9th.
Okay.
So you can see me or see it on the poster. It's fine. We got a choice. I mean, you can go to the cemetery or you can go to the master plan.
Okay. Lee Cornwell's memorial notice is on the bulletin board. And you can also see James for further information. March 22nd, there's a sober kickball somewhere. It's on the board too, if you follow. And we'll see, next week we've got Ed S., who's the acting secretary of the Tuesday night 8 p.m. beginners group. He has been sober since it's coming up on his second year. So he's really coming along well, and this will be the first time he shared his story. So we really appreciate y'all's support coming out and listening to his story. And then the following week, we've got some experience with Angela P. of Clarkston, who was been sober since 1990, and for about 15 years, NAVA was her stomping grounds. So she picked up a 20-year chip a couple of weeks back, and Frank reminisced with her a moment and recommended that we have her for a speaker, and I happened to have an opening, so everything worked out great. That's March 15th, two Mondays from now. And anything else? Judy, got something? All right.
Does anybody know
what
my memorial service is
going to
be?
We're taking bets. Okay, well, let's wrap it up. I'd like to remind everyone that anonymity is the spiritual foundation of all our traditions. Ever remind us to play principles, place principles for personalities. For those who will. Lord's Prayer. And let's have a moment of silence for those still suffering inside and outside this room. And who always makes a great meeting?
Father, art in heaven, hallowed be thy name. Thy kingdom come, thy will be done, on earth as it is in heaven.
Give us this day our daily bread, and forgive us our trespasses, as we forgive those who trespass against us. And lead us not into temptation, but deliver us from evil. For thine is the kingdom, the power, and the glory, forever and ever. Amen.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.